look. Rex stared at me, anger persisting in the line of his jaw and the intensity of his eye squint. I cleared my throat. When he asked me out, I said yes. What I didn't share was that, other than Cyrus when we were younger, no one had ever shown interest in me, or asked me out or flirted with me. Declan had been the first person to make me feel smart. Only Rex and one other guy at our high school were taller than me. It wasn't a secret that, by and large, high school boys didn't make a habit of asking out girls who were their height or taller. And? Rex prompted, leaning forward and placing his elbows on his knees. His eyes were affixed to his hands. He picked me up in a Maserati for our date, took me to this ridiculously fancy restaurant, then to this amazing club, and we danced all night. I had the best time. I'd had no idea how seductive it could be to be wanted by someone experienced and older, especially someone who seemed so far out of my league. He said he was an investment banker, and I had no reason not to believe him.
He wasn't an investment banker.
No. He pretended to be one and swindled a bunch of people out of a crap ton of money. But that part is for later. He proposed after 3 months, and I said yes, so we got married. Rex's eyes lifted to mine, searching.
Why'd you marry him?
I thought I was in love and living in a fairy tale. I said, because it was the truth. See? Stupid. He seemed to hesitate before asking.
Your mom, she died just after graduation, right?
That's right. She'd left me some money, and I'd been doing fairly well financially, had savings and a house before the marriage. After the divorce, the court had sold everything of hers that had any value, leaving me with just photo albums, 2 handmade quilts that no one had bought at auction, and a few books.
Did he?
Rex frowned, swallowed, then started again.
Did he treat you well?
He did. At first he did. I nodded, thinking back. But after we were married for a few weeks, he started telling me I should try to be a model. And then shortly after that, he'd host these dinners where he told people I was a model, and that made things awkward.
Why awkward?
Well, because I'd contradict him and tell the truth that I wasn't, and then he'd get mad when we were alone. Basically, he wanted me to lie about it and pretend to be a fashion model and tried to make me feel bad for not just doing it. He said it would make him look good in front of his business associates and that it was all just one big game, that they expected me to pretend. BS like that.
What did you do?
I couldn't lie. I shrugged, not feeling like any more of an explanation was necessary. And when I refused, I realized the fairy tale was over, and I'd made a huge mistake.
He wanted to divorce you? Because you wouldn't lie?
No. He was too busy by then because his other web of lies had come crashing down. He'd borrowed against fake collateral in order to create a facade of wealth. And then he'd conned a bunch of people into investing in fake companies and startups. He pocketed the money to bankroll his lifestyle and brought in new investors by living more and more extravagantly.
Shit.
I chuckled. Yeah. Anyway, I found out when the police came and arrested us both.
Holy shit.
And when it became clear I had no idea, they offered me a deal. I would divorce him ASAP and testify against him. If I did so, I wouldn't have to serve more jail time as an accomplice. Ultimately, I didn't have much to offer the prosecution, even though I tried to be super cooperative, especially when I found out he'd been cheating on me the whole time. I paused here to breathe around the same something that always lodged in my throat whenever I thought about being cheated on. I didn't love him now. I had no residual feelings for him, except loathing. But for some strange reason, the cheating always choked me up. Clearing my throat, I continued. When it came time for the divorce settlement, they gave me just 10% of his total debts instead of 50%, which turned out to be 50% of the new debt he'd accrued since we married.
Fucking hell.
Rex said on an exhale, giving his head a subtle shake. I declared bankruptcy. Since there was no way I could fork over hundreds of thousands of dollars on a bartender's salary. Oh, yeah, Walker hired me back, no questions asked. He's a good guy.
Did the bankruptcy ruling wipe out the debt?
I laughed. No, that's not how bankruptcy works. I had to pay it back.
Pay it back? Pay it back? You weren't the one who...
Rex stopped himself, shoving his fingers into his short hair.
Sorry, continue.
They reduced the amount and gave me a payment plan to pay back the creditors and stretched it out over 10 years.
How many years do you have left?
2.
Fuck.
It's okay. Rex chuckled, a sound without humor.
It's really not.
No, it is. I learned a good lesson, and that lesson has likely saved me from lots of misery since. His gaze flickered over me.
Oh yeah? What's that?
I shrugged. Never trust anything or anyone that seems too good to be true. Rex opted to stare at me and keep his thoughts to himself for several seconds before asking suddenly,
Is this why you don't date?
He winced subtly as soon as the words left his mouth, giving me the sense he hadn't meant to speak them out loud. Before he could take the question back or apologize, I answered, It's the main reason, yes. But also, who wants to date a bartender with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, trust issues, and too many hobbies? I chuckled, shaking my head. I promised myself I wouldn't date anyone until the money was paid back, and I was, am, debt-free. I don't want to...
What?
I frowned thoughtfully at the carpet, admitting to Rex what I'd never admitted to myself. Enter into another relationship where I'm automatically at a disadvantage. Where I'm the weaker of the two, with less to offer. I sighed, studying the weird pattern of the short fibers. Admittedly, being a bartender has made it easier.
You being a bartender has made not dating easier?
He sounded surprised by this.
You must get hit on all the time.
My mouth curved with a slight smile. People tell bartenders things they wouldn't tell their therapist or their priest. Not a week goes by without a sad sack coming in and spilling their guts about a shitty marriage. The husband cheats on her with a woman half her age, or the wife leaves because she's in love with someone else, usually his best friend. Sometimes they come in to celebrate their divorce and end up spending the whole evening complaining about what they didn't get in the divorce settlement. It's marriage prophylaxis.
It paints a skewed picture,
he muttered. I stared at nothing for a moment, sifting through all the sad stories I'd been told during my years behind the bar.
Why do you do it?
Rex asked quietly, pulling my attention back to him. His head was cocked to the side, his gaze open and searching.
Why listen? Why not just tune them out?
Because I've been where they are. I smiled wider. Walker was my bartender, serving me Shirley Temples because I was too young for alcohol, and he made all the difference. He got me through it by listening. He set me up with Kaylee as a roommate. He knew her mom and made the introduction so I wouldn't be homeless.
Abby.
Rex sighed, frowned, shook his head again, opened his mouth, closed it. I reached forward and grabbed his hand. It's okay, Rex. It really is. I'm good. I'm very content now with my life. And yes, the stories are depressing, but I know what they're going through, or some version of it, and I think... I waited until he gave me his eyes again before finishing my thought. I think that makes me the right person to listen. Chapter 10. Sometimes life is too hard to be alone, and sometimes life is too good to be alone. Elizabeth Gilbert, committed. A skeptic makes peace with marriage. The wedding was fine. During the reception, Rex had also been fine. Not nearly as touchy-feely as the rehearsal dinner the night before, but perfectly fine. Once I'd talked myself out of being disappointed by his lack of pretend long, hot looks, pretend playful endearments, and pretend kisses, I'd settled into my placeholder role with cheerful aplomb. Unlike the event yesterday, several people had braved Rex's fuck-off-not-now face to request a photo or an autograph during the reception, which gave me a little thrill each time. I wasn't sure of Rex's feelings on the subject, but I thoroughly enjoyed watching people gush about how much they loved and admired him, taking pictures for his fans and making funny faces while I snapped the photos, only sometimes succeeding in cracking Rex's granite exterior enough to make him smile. He hadn't asked me to dance, and I hadn't suggested we do so. As a paid placeholder, I figured it was not my role to have an opinion one way or the other. I'd stood next to him, smiled when appropriate, laughed when appropriate, and refreshed our drinks when the occasion arose, which had given me an opportunity to move around and stretch my legs. He drank nothing but ice water with lime, and I'd nursed two glasses of champagne all night. All in all, this job was startlingly similar to being a bartender or a waitress, except instead of serving multiple customers, I had only one. Thus, when Rex leaned down and whispered in my ear, "Act like you're tired and ask me to leave," I gave the world a full Monty view of my back molars as I yawned and leaned my head on his shoulder, whining softly about having to get up early and needing rest. Rex placed his arm around my waist and steered us over to the bride and groom to say our goodbyes. Amy looked stunning, and her husband couldn't stop staring at her, or trying to snog her on the dance floor, long enough to say much more than, "See you later." We strolled from the reception room together and didn't separate until we were on the elevator. Once the doors closed, I stepped away from his hold and he let his arm drop. We retreated to the opposite sides of the spacious lift. Rex leaned against the elevator wall, inspecting me with tired eyes.
"You were amazing."
"Thank you, it has pockets," I muttered. The words automatic. I laughed at the absurdity of them, rolling my eyes at myself. I mean, no problem.
"Thank you."
I fought against the urge to curtsy, instead tipping my head. "You're welcome."
"How you were with the fans, not..."
He seemed to weigh his words.
"Not getting upset."
"Why would I get upset because you have fans? Heck, I get it." The side of Rex's mouth hitched, his gaze moving over me.
"I bet you do have fans."
"No," I laughed, glancing at the elevator buttons and noting our progress toward the lobby. I meant, I am a fan.
"You're a fan."
"Of course I am. I'm a fan of yours. I love watching you play football."
"Really?"
He cracked a smile and, for reasons unknown, something about the expression made my palms sweaty. "Yes, really. Aren't you a fan of anyone?" If my hero, which to many people you are their hero, materialized at a party and I had the chance to tell them how much they meant to me, I wouldn't care about talking to their date. I'd want to talk to them. I can't even say for certain I'd notice if they had a date. When fans see the object of their admiration, they sort of have tunnel vision, you know? His eyebrows pulled together, like maybe he was confused, so I added, maybe that makes me a bad person.
No, it doesn't. You're right. But you're the first woman I've, taken to one of these things who has that perspective.
Why? What usually happens? Now he chuckled, rubbing the back of his neck.
Well, usually she, my date, doesn't like it. The people who come up and don't seem to notice she's there. My dates don't like being invisible, and I get that. I understand I wanted to be treated like an accessory.
He sounded thoughtful, entirely reasonable, and exhausted. For the record, since you're paying me to go to these things and I'm here in a professional capacity, I don't mind being an accessory. Rex's forehead wrinkled, and I got the sense I'd said something wrong. I rushed to clarify. And for the record, even if this were an alternate reality and we were on an actual date, I wouldn't have felt like an accessory tonight. More like I seriously contemplated the matter and settled on support. I'm here in a supportive role. Tonight wasn't about me, and that's perfectly fine. Not everything, or most things, need to be about me. I don't mind being invisible. But I guess it might also help that if I had a superpower, I'd choose invisibility.
You're not invisible,
he grumbled, full on scowling. I tapped my chin, deciding to lighten the mood rather than address his odd feelings about my preferred superpower. Then I should add more camouflage to my closet. That made him huff a little laugh, which had been my goal, and I smiled at my success, both at making him laugh and at making it through the evening without having to excuse myself for deep breathing exercises. It had been a good night. We'd settled into a rhythm, and I felt more confident and comfortable with his proposal than I had yesterday, especially now that he knew the truth about my past. Which, speaking of, I opened my mouth to broach the subject when the elevator dinged, cutting me off. A moment later, the doors slid open. Rex, a smile lingering on his face from my joke, put his hand over the pocket door to keep it from closing while I exited, and then followed me out, stepping close to my side and wrapping his arm low around my waist. I was about to peer up at him in question, but then caught sight of a few wedding guest stragglers in the lobby. Ah, I see. I wrapped my arm around his waist, too, and he glanced down at me, lifting an eyebrow.
You okay to drive?
No, I don't have my car, remember? I'm gonna call an Uber.
Oh.
Rex frowned at this news, but his forehead soon cleared.
Text me when you get home and let me know how much to reimburse you.
I scoffed. I'm sure the evening's fee will cover a $30 car trip.
No, I want to reimburse you for everything. In fact,
Rex looked left, then right, then pulled me over to a cluster of sofas in the hotel's lobby, hidden by a large column and several tall plants. Sitting us down on one of the couches, he faced me. Our knees bumped at his closeness.
Have you decided?
Unable to hold his hazel gaze, I worried my lip and studied the back of the column. If it were as simple as what we did tonight, me showing up to support you when you needed, then I would absolutely say yes.
Why isn't it that simple?
I closed my eyes. Rex.
I'll pay your ex-husband off. It's nothing.
I don't want you using your money for that. He was quiet for a beat. I opened my eyes and found him staring at me. What? What is it? I leaned back a little so I could see him better.
What if I already did?
I held very still. Did what? He glanced away.
It's done.
I didn't miss how his jaw ticked or the uncompromising severity behind the words.
I paid him off through a broker. He can't say anything. He can't sell his story to anyone else.
When did you do this? I just told him about Declan this morning. When would he have had the time?
I got a call just after the wedding ceremony that it was done, but I'd put it into motion this morning. My guy's really good. The best.
I heaved a heavy sigh and covered my face with both hands. Rex!
You underestimate how much I need you.
Making a sound of disgruntlement, mostly to combat the volcanic eruption in my chest caused by his words, I dropped my hands and glared at him. You do not need me. 4 days ago, you didn't even know me. And I really wish you hadn't paid off Declan. I don't like others interceding on my behalf.
I paid him off for purely selfish reasons.
I'm sure my features broadcasted the intensity of my skepticism.
Abby, I do need you.
He said, matter-of-factly, without effect or dramatics.
My job is about hard work, talent, skill, sure. But it's also about what's going on up here.
He tapped his temple.
If you and I marry, a whole host of bullshit just evaporates.
A fissure of understanding pushed the scale toward Rex's side of the argument. I assumed by a whole host of bullshit he meant, at least in part, the sports announcer who'd co-opted Rex's nickname to mean training wheels for women. It's Clarence O'Day, isn't it? That sportscaster who makes fun of your nickname. We hadn't discussed the guy yet, but if I had to guess now, looking at the harsh, unhappy line of Rex's mouth and the murderous intent in his eyes, that dude and his constant perpetuating of the nickname perversion had been messing with Rex's head.
That's part of it,
he rasped out, glaring at some spot behind me.
Mostly, it's about building a team to guarantee success. I'm tired of being distracted by failure.
Failure? What failure? He cut me a hard look.
You know.
I don't think I do.
I'm a shit boyfriend.
I found this hard to believe, but it didn't matter what I thought. He seemed to think it was true. I tried a different tactic and pointed out the obvious. Not every date needs to lead someplace serious. You can date someone without being committed. Keep things casual and... what? He was shaking his head before I'd come anywhere close to finishing.
I don't do that. I don't have time or energy for that kind of fucking around. It's either serious or it's not.
Inspecting him, I marveled at this oddity in his personality. Who usually breaks up with who in your past relationships? You or...
I do.
Because you don't...
I don't have time or energy to burn with someone who doesn't want what I want.
Which is? This wasn't me. I didn't push people for information, but a wee little voice in the back of my head was leading the charge. She wondered if maybe, while I stood in as a placeholder for Rex, I could also find him his forever partner. Our former classmate Rachel McQuaid Marie had been right yesterday when she'd said Rex deserved to be with someone awesome. As he often did, Rex opened his mouth as if words were on the tip of his tongue, but he hesitated as his eyes moved between mine, like maybe I'd judge him for his answer. "Do you even know what you want?" I asked, hoping the question sounded non-judgmental.
I want to be successful.
That had me lifting an eyebrow. And the women you've dated previously didn't want you to be successful?
No, that's not. I don't want to let anyone down.
Okay. He closed his eyes, looking mildly frustrated.
If I'm not enough for someone exactly as I am, if I can't be successful at my job and meet my teammates' needs, successful with my family, my aunt and uncle, and meet their needs, and also consistently be what she needs, there's no point in continuing, is there? But I do need someone for events, stuff like today, exactly what you did in order to maintain success elsewhere.
The picture of who Rex McMurtry was, truly, as a human, with flaws and peculiar hopes and quirks and strange ideas about the world, came more sharply into focus, and I filled in the remaining blanks out loud. So, you build a team of people you pay to fill the gaps, and you want me to be part of that team. He nodded, but then his attention flickered to the right, perhaps rethinking our conversation.
Clarence O'Day's definitely part of it, though, what he says about the women I've dated.
How so? Is it messing with your head? I thought it might also be messing with his friendships. I couldn't imagine Walker ever being okay with someone saying his wife had needed training wheels before marrying him.
It's not about me, not really. I don't like...
Rex made a sound of frustration.
These women, the ones he's talking about, they're friends of mine, good people. I don't like how he talks about them. He calls me their training wheels or whatever the fuck.
Rex breathed out a bitter sound.
It's degrading and disrespectful. They deserve better.
Unable to stop myself, I leaned over and rested my head on his shoulder, my hand coming to his back to rub soothing circles on the wide expanse. Miraculously, the action felt entirely natural. If only teenage Abby could see me now, she'd faint. But it wasn't like that. Rex was... We're friends. At the very least, we were becoming friends. Teammates, co-conspirators for good, I hoped, and I wanted to help him. Currently, I didn't feel any butterflies. I didn't feel flustered or nervous. I felt only compassion for another person. A flawed, weirdo, human in need. He sighed, resting his cheek against the top of my head, accepting my comfort.
I wanted to stop, for everyone's sake, but I can't make a statement without making it worse. Not yet.
Rex was in an impossible position. If he called out the announcer, Rex would be labeled a crybaby, or sensitive, and things would just get worse, especially for someone like Rex who relied on his gruffness, fuck-off face, and an aura of toughness to be effective in the field and for his team. Ignoring Clarence hadn't done any good. I also saw his point. If Rex were married, presumably the taunting would end, and the guy would have to turn the spotlight of his gross attention elsewhere. But that didn't seem right. If we can get Clarence to stop taunting you, that's good. But, Rex, what if he just turns his attention to someone else?
I have an idea about that.
Rex straightened, forcing me to straighten as well. His eyes landed on one of my braids and he picked it up, rubbing his thumb back and forth over the tied-off end.
Once we're married for a few months, the next time I'm asked about it, because they'll always ask me about it until I'm finally able to shut it down, I have a plan.
I nodded, glad we were on the same page. Like me, he didn't want to move the spotlight elsewhere. He wanted to turn this kind of ugliness off completely. But something he'd just said snagged my attention. Exactly how long do you see this, I motioned between us, lasting? Do you have an end date in mind? His stare grew enigmatic. Not unfriendly. More like opaque, and he shrugged.
As long as you're willing.
What if I'm always willing? Are we going to be fake married forever? A hint of a smile curved his mouth, and he let my braid drop.
Sounds good to me.
I snorted. Yeah, right. Come on, a year? Two?
I need your help, Abby. Your help. You're not just someone to fill in a gap. You're you. I would never ask anyone else to do this. I need you. I trust you.
His focus lifted and he captured my eyes.
Will you help me?
Chapter 11. We are what we pretend to be. So we must be careful about what we pretend to be. Kurt Vonnegut, Mother Night. Halloween came and went, and so did all my special orders for the Etsy shop. I'd been working day and night to catch up from my lost weekend with Rex. Not that my bank account had suffered. He'd sent me a cashier's check for $5,000 in the mail, like a psycho. After waffling back and forth for a week because it was more than we'd agreed upon, I'd deposited it. Then I'd paid back Kaylee in full for the money she'd loaned me over the years. It felt good to pay her back, but after living with thousands of dollars in my checking account for 2 weeks, it hadn't felt good, ultimately, to deposit Rex's cashier's check. I wanted to help him, but I didn't want his money. I needed to work to pay bills, but I wouldn't be able to work as much if I helped him. And that's where I currently lived. Contradictory wants and needs and levels of comfort with my present situation. The prenup arrived the Monday after Halloween. Cue tense music. I opened it, not knowing what it was. When I unfolded the thick stack of paper and read his name and mine together at the top of the page, I stopped. My insides too shaken to comprehend legalese and heretofores and aforementions heavily seasoned with a smattering of Latin. Rex, who'd been radio silent since the wedding, texted me the day after the document arrived, sliding into my messages as though we were friends who sent legal documents back and forth like some friends sent memes. Rex,
did you read the prenup? Text me any changes once your lawyer takes a look.
Rex,
send me a joke.
Rex,
if you want / have time.
I frowned at the first two of his texts. If this was how he messaged his ex-girlfriends, demanding jokes like I was a dancing monkey, then I could understand why he considered himself to be a shitty boyfriend. And yet, for some reason, the third text made me smile, and more than made up for the second one. Abby, I don't have a lawyer, so I'll be out of contact for a while as I go to law school and study for the Texas bar exam. Abby, that last text was the joke. He immediately responded. Rex,
you are hilarious. I wish you were here. If you need a lawyer, pick anyone. I'll reimburse the cost.
Well, I didn't like that idea one bit. The last thing I wanted was more of Rex's money. But I didn't want to sign any legal document without having it reviewed by someone who was in my corner. So, again, I found myself with contradictory wants and needs and levels of comfort with my present situation. I didn't text him back, and I didn't start cold calling family law firms. A solution occurred to me later in the afternoon. An obvious one. I tracked down Kaylee at her apartment after making a copy of the prenup at FedEx and blacking out our, mine and Rex's, identifiable information. To what do I owe this honor? Kaylee smiled brightly, not at all perturbed by my unannounced visit. Can I come in? I have a friend who needs legal advice. Pulling off her glasses, she stepped to one side and motioned me into her apartment. Part of me missed sharing a space with her. She was so tidy, and she never decorated for the holidays, which meant I could do what I wanted and enjoy her wonder and awe. As I glanced around at the blank canvas that was her immaculate living room, I made a mental note to bring over a few decorations sometime this week. What kind of advice? She padded over to the open door of her balcony, where she'd obviously been sitting. After the pre-Halloween cold snap, Austin had been experiencing several gorgeous sunny days with highs in the mid-70s. It's a prenup. I trailed after her, shaking my head as she lifted up a bottle of white wine. No, thank you. I can't stay long. I had a whole mess of half-sculpted ceramic ornaments to paint sitting on my kitchen counter and a scarf for Kaylee. I really wanted to finish knitting so I could make a hat for Walker's wife Ramona, color block mittens from a friend Josephine, and so on. A prenup? She held her hand out and I passed it over. Unlike me, who'd struggled with the meaning of every paragraph, she placed her glasses back on her nose and powered through the whole thing in 5 minutes while lounging at her patio table and gulping wine. Well, she sat back in her chair. What does your friend want to know? Is it fair? She tilted her head back and forth. It depends. Why is your friend getting married? For love or money? I worried my bottom lip before reluctantly saying, let's say love. Then it's more than fair. She keeps everything she came in with, gives up nothing, cannot be held responsible if the marriage accrues debts, but then gets half the value of any property purchased during the marriage, regardless of her financial contribution to the property. She can end the marriage at any time, and he is responsible for all legal fees. In addition, he settled on her a hefty monthly allowance, which can't be reduced over the course of the marriage and grows along with inflation. I'm sure my eyes were as round as saucers. What? That's not all. Each kid comes with a dispensation. $2 million for the first two and $5 million for each additional child. I choked on spit and shock. Children? And there are benchmark payments for each major anniversary. 5 years, 10, 15, 20, etc. 20 years? What? Surely Rex wasn't planning on this farce lasting 20 years. And kids? You look dismayed, and you're not even trying to hide it. Interesting. Kaylee tapped her fingernails on the wine glass, her eyes narrowing. Who is this friend? My cheeks puffed out with my exhale, and I croaked. Can I hire you? Why? Because I need some of that lawyer-client confidentiality stuff. Okay. She smiled, looking at me like I was weird and interesting and amusing. What have you gotten yourself into, Abby? Some sort of Russian oligarch wants a mail-order bride? I laughed without humor. Her suggestion wasn't too far from the truth. No, a pro football player. Kaylee chuckled, but then the amusement vanished when I just continued staring at her. Wait, you're serious? Not a mail-order bride, more like a fake wife. A placeholder. And there won't be any children or 5-year wedding anniversaries. I'm sure that stuff is just in there to make the whole thing read more legit. You are serious. She appeared winded. You are being serious right now. I rubbed my forehead. Okay, so remember that guy? The big guy who walked into the bar and I said I went to high school with him a few Wednesdays ago? Saying nothing, she nodded. We did go to high school together, and his name is Rex McMurtry. Shut up! She jumped to her feet, her wine sloshing in her glass. She didn't notice it spill on the table, so she must have been really shocked. You went to high school with T.W. McMurtry? Why didn't you ever tell me? Sit down. I leaned my elbows on the table and surrendered to the fact that I wasn't going to be able to figure this out on my own. I needed her help. I needed to talk this through with someone. But first, I think I will take that glass of wine. I'd left Kaylee's apartment feeling both less and more confused. Less confused because the prenup went above and beyond in protecting me, should Rex go into debt or fall on hard financial/legal times. Signing the prenup wouldn't put me in danger. It wasn't a scary document, and I could sign it without fear of harm to my future. Kaylee had also advised me to take the money, all of it. She'd offered to introduce me to her finance lady who would help me invest it, and then I'd finally be out of the financial crater caused by the implosion of my first marriage. This last piece of advice didn't feel right. I knew Kaylee only had my best interests at heart, but I couldn't dispel the hovering cloud of doom that pressed down on me every time I seriously considered accepting all that money. I went to work. I went to the studio. I reread my favorite books. I ignored Rex's text messages asking me about the prenup and responded with jokes and goofy memes instead. And still, I couldn't shake the cloud of doom. A full week after Kaylee's review of the document, I woke up in a cold sweat at 3 a.m., yanked violently out of a dream where the police had come to take me to jail for some reason I couldn't exactly remember. Something to do with using illegal glazes on my pottery? Unable to fall back asleep, I'd set up my sewing machine on my kitchen table and stitched together pieces I'd cut a few weeks ago for a new knitting bag I wanted to make for my friend Jonathan. I'd taught him how to knit last year, and he loved ancient Roman history. I'd found the fabric I was using in the dollar bin at Joanne Fabric, head busts of Roman emperors, and snatched it up. The pinning for the bag went at a snail's pace, however. The only time I wished I had an ironing board was when I sewed. While I meticulously pieced and pinned and sewed and meditated on my dream about illegal glazes, a notion occurred to me. And that notion became a decision, which then grew into a determination, which ultimately settled my mettle, leaving me feeling enormously better. I wouldn't take any excess money from Rex. Allowing Rex to pay for expenses like clothes, plane travel, and hotel made total sense. Those were costs I wouldn't normally have accrued. I needed clothes, and I needed to travel places in order to help him in my role as placeholder. It also made sense to accept compensation to cover the days I couldn't work at the bar, since I'd be missing work when I traveled with Rex and went to his events, and I needed to pay my bills. But I decided to accept nothing above what I'd usually make for a day's work. I realized it was the thought of accepting the fee, as Rex called it. It was called something else in the prenup. Allowance, I think. That felt wrong. When we divorced, Rex could use the money I didn't take to reimburse himself for paying off my ex. I could walk away with a clear conscience, minimal disruption, no strings between us except friendship. I reasoned that helping a friend out of a bad situation, like my friends had once done for me, would be more than enough payment. Feeling lighter, more able to breathe, I yawned and turned off my sewing machine. I then walked over to the kitchen counter where I'd left the prenup and I signed it. Snapping a photo of the signature page, I sent it via text to Rex. Abby, I'm mailing this back for your signature today and I'll send you my work schedule for the next month so you can pick a wedding date. Here or Chicago? As soon as I hit send, three dots appeared on Rex's side of the conversation. Lifting an eyebrow, I checked the clock on the screen. It was 5:45 a.m. He must have been up early to work out or for practice. Rex.
Chicago. In 2 weeks. I have a charity thing on Friday night I need you for while you're up here.
Rex.
Assuming that works with your schedule.
I smirked. This was Rex's modus operandi, sending a brusque, demanding text message first, then following it up with something more accommodating. I wondered if he realized how gruff the first message sounded after the fact. Abby. Both days work. And if you have any other events you need me to attend over the next 2 months, please send me a list so I can ask for the days off.
Rex. Richmond game, Thanksgiving. Wedding, second weekend in December. There are more. My agent will share my calendar with you so you can plan.
Rex.
My agent will always arrange for a car to get you from the airport.
My stomach did a little somersault at Richmond game, Thanksgiving. I knew Rex's team was playing on Thanksgiving in Richmond. I also knew Rex's team was expected to lose. I'd never been to a pro game before, but I imagined there would be nothing for me to do at one of his football games other than enjoy myself. So why did he want me there? Unless I'm missing something.
Abby, you want me to go to the Richmond game? On Thanksgiving?
Rex.
Yes.
Abby. How does this work? You'll be playing, so I'll be doing what?
Rex.
Watching the game.
Frowning, I reread his reply several times. I wanted to go, absolutely. But I didn't understand why Rex would want me at one of his games just so I could spectate. And why this game? The request seemed too good to be true, and thus excitement warred with unease.
Abby, what do you need me to do while I'm there?
I want to go, but why do I need to be there? What is expected of me?
Rex,
all the players' spouses go and sit together. I need you to be my wife. I already have your ticket.
Every muscle in my body tensed. Goosebumps of doom broke out over my skin, and some morose, pessimistic part of me had a good chuckle at my expense. Rex wouldn't be there as a buffer or focus of attention. I'd have to try to blend in on my own with the other players' wives, while not letting them see how much of a dumb, uncultured hick I was. Great. Just freaking great. See? If something seems too good to be true, it always, always is.
Chapter 12. The thing is, I suppose, he said, that one gets into the habit of being oneself. It takes some great upheaval to crack that shell and force us to discover what else might be underneath. Tana French. The Witch Elm. The morning after sending the snapshot of my signature on the prenup, I awoke to a text message from Rex, sent several hours earlier.
Rex. Where'd you get that tall table?
Rubbing the sleep from my eyes, I sat up in bed and fired off a response.
Abby. Who dis? No one I know would text me at 5 a.m.
Rex.
Your fiancé.
Abby. Oh, him.
Rex.
Yeah, that guy.
Abby. I'll email you the address and phone number of the dealer in Texas. He imports from the Netherlands. Figuring that would be the end of it, I placed my phone face down on the nightstand. But then it buzzed again almost immediately.
Rex.
CC my agent, please.
Abby. Why, is she tall too?
Rex.
She'll place the order.
Abby. Does she order all your stuff?
Rex.
No, just furniture, clothes, food, airline tickets, gifts, etc.
I smiled quizzically at this information. Did Rex delegate everything to paid employees? How tidy.
Abby.
So she's your work wife?
Rex.
You could say that.
Abby. And now you'll have me, so that makes you a bigamous work husband.
Rex.
Big work love. Winky face.
A laugh burst out of me at the unexpected response and winky face. Shaking my head, I placed the phone face down on the nightstand again and got ready for my day, resolved to push the perplexing conversation from my mind.
Rex. Hey.
Rex.
You around?
I lifted an eyebrow at Rex's mid-afternoon text. I'd just arrived at the bar to start my shift and had been counting chip bags in the back. Since today was a Monday, I doubted we'd get a substantive rush at any point this evening. Mondays and Tuesdays were typically used to clean up from the craziness of the weekend. Abby. Yes, what's up?
Rex. How was your day?
Abby. Not bad. I had a productive day at the studio, then biked over to work. Now I'm counting chip bags. I reread my response several times, then decided to add, Abby. How about you?
Rex. Studio.
Abby. I'm a member of a pottery studio. I make ceramic goods.
Rex. Like plates and mugs?
Abby. Yep.
Rex. Do you sell them?
Abby. Yep.
Rex. Can I buy some?
Abby. Nope.
What's so funny?
My head whipped up and I found Walker standing just inside the back room doorway. Glancing between me and my phone, Walker pointed to my cell.
Is that Josephine with more of those TikToks?
My friend Josephine had charmed Walker by showing him funny TikTok videos over the summer. He wasn't certain what TikTok was, just that it was a social media thing used by the younger generation. I'm messaging a friend. Sorry. My phone buzzed in my hand, but I resisted looking at the screen. I'd texted my friends while working before, but for some reason, this time it felt different. Like I was taking advantage of Walker's leniency.
No need to apologize.
Walker walked toward the office, giving me a puzzled look as he strolled past. I waited until I heard the door close behind me before reading the new message from Rex. Rex.
Why not? Aren't I ceramics worthy?
Abby. Because my sister wife buys your furniture, clothes, food, airline tickets, gifts, etc. If she wants to buy any of my ceramics, that's fine. I hadn't met or spoken with Rex's agent yet, but given how she seemed to manage so much of his life, I hoped we would be friends. Rex.
She doesn't buy my ceramics. I am very particular about those.
Abby. Why do they have to be giant-sized? Rex.
Yep, and perfectly formed, just like the rest of me.
I barked to laugh even as my face flooded with heat. He didn't mean... Did he? Or was I reading too much into the text? Get your mind out of the gutter, Abby. Squinting at his message, I dithered and hemmed and hawed before, on a rush of recklessness, responding with, Abby. Ego included, obvs. As soon as I sent the text, a weird, tight discomfort settled in my stomach. What was I doing? Text flirting with Rex. That's what you're doing. Regret and confusion pressed heavy on my shoulders. Did I want to text flirt with Rex? Or anyone? I don't think so. I'd meant every word I'd told him. I didn't date. I didn't want to date. I had no desire to enter into any kind of romantic relationship until the debt was paid off. Maybe we weren't flirting, but the fact that the notion had even entered my brain was troubling. I shouldn't want to flirt with Rex or anyone. Determined to stop thinking about him and our conversations in that light, I wondered if I should add something else. Something to dispel the awkwardness I might have just created with my last message. Before I could decide what to say, though, a new text came through. Rex.
You know it, babe.
Rex.
Do you want to pick out your wedding dress, or should I have my agent do it?
Nibbling my lip, I pushed my hair out of my face and tried to focus on his text. 1 week after signing the prenup, waking up to new messages from Rex was no longer unusual, but it was problematic. 5 out of the last 7 days, I'd awoken from sexy Rex dreams just to find a question from him on my phone, usually asking about my schedule or what I had planned for the day. After graduating from high school and prior to signing the prenup, the frequency of my Rex-related dreams had severely declined. Maybe an odd one here or there, once or twice a year. But with all the text messages and friendly banter, and him being so freaking hot when I'd seen him last, the fantasies had made their forceful return. They were also much more, adult than they had been before. I'd never felt brave enough to have a one-night stand, figuring with my luck I'd end up with a missing kidney at the end of the night, or in prison again, or shipped off to some ice planet as the new bride for a blue alien. But recently, I'd seriously considered finding a guy for some no-string sex. I desperately needed some relief from the constant barrage of wrecks. My brain mostly clear of the lingering post-stream images, I typed out what I hoped was a thoughtful response. Abby, your agent can do it, unless you need me to for some reason. Remind her that I'm tall.
Rex, you're short.
Abby, I am not short.
Rex, shorty.
Abby, keep that up and I'll wear platforms to the wedding, shorty.
Rex, I would love to see that.
Ignoring the lovely swirling heat playing with my internal organs, I tried not to smile or think too much about how natural it had become for our texts to veer into flirtatious territory. Then again, maybe they weren't flirtatious. Maybe I was reading too much into his messages. Again. He is not flirting with you, and you don't want him to flirt with you, because you don't want to flirt with anyone. As usual, I was the one to change the subject and steer the conversation back on course. Abby, what is the plan for the wedding?
Rex, after Saturday's practice, we'll get married on the stadium field, and the team photog will be there to document for media.
Rex,
sound okay?
Abby, sounds awesome.
Rex. And the team will be there.
Abby. What? Seriously?
Rex. Yep, it's all set.
Abby. Please tell me you'll be in your football uniform. You can pick out my wedding dress, anything you want, if you promise to wear your home uniform for the wedding. I cringed almost as soon as I sent the text, my fingers flying over the keypad faster than my brain had been able to catch the request or the offer. Ah, well, it was done now, and I should have known better than to text first thing in the morning. I was prone to making an idiot of myself during our morning text exchanges. I grew more circumspect and thoughtful as the day progressed, which helped me not at all. Rex seemed to prefer messaging me in the morning.
Rex, you'll wear anything I want.
Abby, as long as it's not the Squall's mascot outfit, yes.
Rex, my jersey?
Abby, and what else?
Rex, platforms.
Abby, and?
Rex, that's it.
My face on fire, I sputtered a shocked laugh and lifted my hair off my hot neck. This was flirting, right? He was flirting with me. It had been over 10 years since I'd flirted with someone who wasn't drunk or almost drunk. I was out of practice, but this was most definitely flirting, right? Or maybe he's just being funny. I'd been the one to bring up the platforms earlier. Perhaps this was him being clever and silly. Come on, stupid. He's just trying to develop a repertoire with you. Break the ice. This isn't flirting. Ugh. I'd thought the word flirt so much it was starting to sound strange in my head. Whatever. My point was, Rex would not flirt with me. He just wouldn't. From his perspective, he was paying me to fake date and marry him. If we weren't friendly and comfortable with each other one-on-one, then we would have no hope of convincing anyone our marriage was real. Obviously, that's all this was, and I needed to stop entertaining crazy thoughts and confusing myself. Frowning at the phone, I mentally composed several potential responses while successfully talking myself off the crazy ledge. After much debate, I responded with, "Abby." "Sure thing, boss." A reminder to myself, that's who Rex believed himself to be. I was only doing this as a favor. I wouldn't take his money above the necessary costs incurred by helping him. But he still thought of himself as my boss, and I seriously doubted Rex would ever flirt with someone he considered an employee. He's being friendly, not flirting. The end. Stop thinking about it. I just walked into my apartment and flipped on the lights after a late shift when my phone buzzed in my back pocket. "Rex."
"Are you awake?"
"Abby, what's up?" I stared at the screen, waiting for a response, and shifted on my feet tiredly. The three animated dots danced and persisted for a full minute. Either he had a lot to tell me, or he'd typed out a message, deleted it, and was typing out something new. Crossing to the kitchen, I placed my phone on the counter and walked to my wee little pantry to extract a box of shredded wheat. I also pulled out a jar of Nutella. The day had been a long one. A bar fight, a gun pulled, broken glasses and bottles, ambulances, police, and I needed the comfort of Nutella slathered on something crunchy. Finally, just as I finished taking my first bite, the phone vibrated. "Rex."
"How was your day?"
I stared at his text, replaying the events of the evening. I didn't want to unload on him about my day. That's why Nutella and shredded wheat existed. "Abby." "Okay, how was yours?"
"Rex." "Is the car okay? Does it still smell? Do I need to send the guys back out to detail?"
"Abby." "It's fine.